clinical applications of biofeedback and neurofeedback, a comprehensive overview. Part 1, Anxiety and Anxiety Disorders. Imagine sitting in a crowded coffee shop when your heart suddenly starts racing, your palms become sweaty, and the room seems to close in around you. For millions of people with anxiety disorders, this scenario isn't hypothetical. It's a regular occurrence that can strike at any moment, transforming routine activities into overwhelming challenges. To understand how biofeedback and neurofeedback can help, we need to first dive deep into the intricate mechanisms of anxiety disorders. The neurobiology of anxiety. Anxiety disorders represent a complex interplay between the brain's threat detection system and its regulatory mechanisms. The amygdala, often called the brain's fear center, becomes hyperactive in anxiety disorders, while the prefrontal cortex, responsible for emotional regulation, shows decreased activity. This creates a neural imbalance where the brain's alarm system operates on overdrive while its brake system functions below optimal levels. The autonomic nervous system plays a crucial role in this dynamic. In anxiety disorders, we observe chronic activation of the sympathetic nervous system, our fight-or-flight response, coupled with reduced parasympathetic activity, our rest-and-digest system. This imbalance manifests as an increased heart rate and blood pressure, accompanied by shallow and rapid breathing. Muscle tension accumulates, particularly in the shoulders and jaw, as the body remains perpetually prepared for threat. Meanwhile, peripheral temperature drops as blood flow shifts to major muscle groups, resulting in the cold, clammy hands commonly associated with anxiety states. The digestive system often becomes disrupted, leading to a range of gastrointestinal symptoms that can further exacerbate anxiety. Demographics and social impact. The prevalence of anxiety disorders reveals their profound societal impact. Panic disorder touches the lives of nearly 3 in every 100 individuals, with symptoms often first appearing in early adulthood. Generalized anxiety disorder reaches even further, affecting up to 6% of the population at any given time. Social phobia shows the widest range of prevalence, impacting anywhere from 2 to 13% of people, depending on how the condition is defined and measured. The gender distribution tells its own story, with a male-to-female ratio of 3 to 2, suggesting complex interactions between biological predispositions and societal influences. The impact on daily life extends far beyond moments of acute anxiety. Relationships often suffer as individuals struggle to maintain connections while managing their symptoms. Work performance can decline as concentration becomes increasingly difficult. Many find themselves gradually withdrawing from social situations, creating a cycle of isolation that reinforces their anxiety. Sleep disturbances become commonplace, leading to a cascade of physical and emotional effects that further compromise quality of life. Heart rate variability biofeedback, a cornerstone intervention. Heart rate variability biofeedback, HRVB, has emerged as a particularly powerful tool for anxiety management. This sophisticated approach teaches patients to optimize their breathing patterns to maximize respiratory sinus arrhythmia, the natural variation in heart rate that occurs with breathing. The training process begins by identifying each individual's resonant frequency, typically around 6 breaths per minute, where heart rate variability reaches its peak amplitude. This optimal breathing rate becomes a foundation for practicing emotional regulation. Surface electromyography in anxiety treatment. Surface electromyography, SEMG, provides another crucial window into the physiological manifestations of anxiety. By measuring electrical activity in key muscle groups, particularly the frontalis muscle of the forehead and the trapezius muscles of the upper back, SEMG helps patients recognize subtle patterns of tension they may not consciously notice. The beauty of SEMG training lies in its immediate feedback. Patients can watch in real time as their muscle tension increases during worried thoughts and decreases during relaxation exercises. Training typically begins with awareness building, as many patients are surprised to discover just how much tension they carry in their bodies throughout the day. As they progress, patients learn to achieve deeper states of relaxation, often reporting that they can feel the difference between what they previously considered relaxed and true muscle relaxation. This newfound awareness becomes a valuable tool for early intervention, allowing them to recognize and address rising tension before it escalates into full-blown anxiety. Temperature biofeedback, the peripheral circulation connection. Temperature biofeedback adds another dimension to anxiety treatment by focusing on peripheral circulation. During anxiety states, blood flow shifts away from the extremities as part of the fight-or-flight response. By learning to warm their hands through biofeedback training, patients gain direct control over this aspect of their autonomic nervous system. The process begins with carefully calibrated temperature sensors attached to the fingers, providing continuous feedback about minute changes in peripheral temperature. Success in temperature biofeedback often marks a significant turning point in treatment. As patients learn to increase their hand temperature, they simultaneously demonstrate mastery over their autonomic nervous system. This achievement often produces a profound psychological impact. Patients who previously felt helpless in the face of anxiety discover they can influence their physiological responses through focused attention and relaxation techniques. Neurofeedback protocols, training the anxious brain. The neurofeedback approach to anxiety takes us directly to its source, the brain's electrical activity patterns. Anxiety typically manifests in the EEG as excessively high beta activity, particularly in the right frontal regions, along with deficient alpha activity. Modern neurofeedback protocols address these patterns through sophisticated training paradigms that help normalize brain activity patterns. A typical protocol might focus on enhancing alpha, 8 to 12 Hz, activity while simultaneously reducing excessive high beta, 20 to 30 Hz, activity. This combination helps promote a state of calm alertness, as alpha waves are associated with relaxed awareness while reduced high beta activity corresponds to decreased anxious arousal. Training sessions usually last 30 to 40 minutes, with patients receiving real-time feedback through visual or auditory signals that reward desired brain activity patterns. Evidence-based efficacy ratings by condition. The clinical efficacy of biofeedback and neurofeedback for anxiety disorders varies by specific condition, with impressive scientific support across several anxiety subtypes. For generalized anxiety disorder, GAD, both biofeedback and neurofeedback have achieved the highest rating of efficacious based on 5 rigorous randomized controlled trials. These studies examined various biofeedback modalities, including heart rate decrease, enhancement of heart rate variability, reduction of skin conductance level, and EMG feedback, alongside neurofeedback protocols that focused on alpha enhancement and alpha-theta training. Panic disorder, PD, shows equally strong support, with biofeedback earning an efficacious and specific rating through 5 randomized controlled trials. The successful interventions focused on increasing end-tidal CO2, enhancing heart rate variability, and reducing muscle tension through EMG feedback. Patients showed significant improvements across multiple measures, including reduced agoraphobic avoidance, decreased panic frequency and severity, and lowered state and trait anxiety scores. For phobias, the evidence is more modest but still encouraging. Both biofeedback and neurofeedback currently hold a possibly efficacious rating, indicating promising results that require additional research confirmation. The existing studies suggest these approaches can help reduce phobic responses, though more controlled trials are needed to establish definitive efficacy. Post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, has emerged as another condition highly responsive to these interventions. Based on 4 randomized controlled trials, both biofeedback and neurofeedback have earned an efficacious rating. The successful protocols included heart rate variability and temperature increase training, alongside neurofeedback approaches targeting specific frequency bands. These interventions produced measurable reductions in both anxiety and depression scores, while significantly reducing core PTSD symptoms. Clinical applications and treatment integration. The practical application of these evidence-based approaches typically begins with careful assessment to match the intervention to the patient's specific anxiety presentation. For instance, in treating GAD, clinicians often start with heart rate variability biofeedback, as this has shown particular effectiveness in addressing the persistent worry characteristic of this condition. Treatment protocols typically span 8 to 12 weeks, with sessions occurring once or twice weekly depending on symptom severity and patient progress. Neurofeedback protocols for anxiety conditions often involve 20 to 40 sessions, with the exact number determined by patient response and symptom improvement. The strongest evidence supports protocols that combine multiple approaches, such as using HRV biofeedback to establish basic relaxation skills before progressing to more advanced neurofeedback training. Part 2: Depression. Understanding the experience and symptoms. Imagine viewing the world through a dark filter that drains the color from every experience. For individuals with major depressive disorder, this isn't just a metaphor. It's their daily reality. Depression manifests through a constellation of symptoms that affect both mind and body. Patients typically experience persistent sadness or loss of pleasure in activities they once enjoyed, a symptom clinicians call anhedonia. Sleep patterns become disrupted, though this can manifest in opposing ways. Some patients sleep excessively, while others battle insomnia. Physical symptoms include significant changes in weight or appetite, while cognitive symptoms range from difficulty concentrating to persistent thoughts about death or suicide. The impact on daily functioning can be profound. Even simple tasks, such as getting out of bed or preparing a meal, can feel overwhelmingly difficult. Patients often describe feeling worthless or excessively guilty about minor past events, their thinking slowed, and their decision-making impaired. Visible physical changes often accompany the psychological weight. Some patients show psychomotor retardation, moving and speaking more slowly than usual, while others experience agitation, unable to sit still. Demographics and societal impact. The prevalence of depression reveals its position as a major public health concern. Recent surveys from 2020 indicate that approximately 8.4% of U.S. adults experienced a major depressive episode within the past year. The condition shows a notable gender disparity, affecting 10.5% of women compared to 6.2% of men. Young adults aged 18 to 25 appear particularly vulnerable, with the highest prevalence rate at 17% of this age group. Perhaps most concerning is the treatment gap. Only 21% of annual cases receive adequate treatment. Without proper intervention, the risks are severe. 25 to 30% of adult patients with untreated depression attempt suicide. The majority of depression cases involve comorbid psychological conditions, complicating both diagnosis and treatment. Neurobiology and pathomechanics. Depression's underlying mechanisms reveal a complex interplay between brain structure, function, and neurotransmitter systems. The condition involves multiple pathways, with key disruptions in the lateral and medial orbitofrontal cortex and limbic system. The lateral orbitofrontal cortex becomes hyperactive, signaling unsuccessful behavior outcomes and contributing to feelings of loss and disappointment. This activation affects networks responsible for self-concept, helping explain the persistent low self-esteem characteristic of depression. Simultaneously, the medial orbitofrontal cortex shows reduced activity, disrupting reward processing and communication with autobiographical memory systems. This helps explain why patients struggle to enjoy daily activities and have difficulty recalling positive experiences. The habenular nucleus, situated near the pineal gland, exhibits dysfunction in its ability to filter negative cognitions and memories, contributing to the classic depressive triad, negative self-perception, a negative view of current circumstances, and a pessimistic future outlook. Part 3: Epilepsy. Understanding seizures and their impact. Imagine losing control of your body without warning, your consciousness flickering like a faulty light bulb, your muscles acting of their own accord. This is the reality for individuals living with epilepsy, a family of neurological disorders characterized by periodic disruptions in normal brain activity. These disruptions manifest in various ways, from brief moments of unconsciousness to dramatic full-body convulsions. The condition presents through several distinct types of seizures. Petit mal seizures might appear subtle to observers. The person might seem to be merely daydreaming, their consciousness briefly interrupted without obvious physical symptoms. These episodes can occur hundreds of times daily, each lasting up to 30 seconds. In contrast, tonic-clonic seizures, formerly known as grand mal seizures, present more dramatically, beginning with a distinctive cry, followed by loss of consciousness, falling, and full-body convulsions. These episodes often include involuntary muscle contractions, potential loss of bladder control, and complete amnesia of the event afterward. Demographics and prevalence. The scope of epilepsy's impact is substantial. In the United States, approximately 2% of adults will experience a seizure at some point in their lives. Interestingly, 2/3 of these individuals won't experience additional episodes. Those who do have multiple seizures receive an epilepsy diagnosis, with causes either remaining unknown, idiopathic, or linked to identifiable factors such as brain tumors, symptomatic. Age plays a crucial role in both diagnosis and prognosis. The age at which seizures first occur often provides valuable clues about their underlying cause, helping guide treatment approaches. In adults, fewer than 20% experience the dramatic tonic-clonic seizures that most people associate with epilepsy, highlighting the importance of recognizing its various manifestations. Neurobiology and pathomechanics. Epileptic seizures result from abnormal electrical activity patterns in the brain. Understanding these patterns requires examining the sensorimotor cortex, a crucial area defined by the central sulcus, which separates the frontal and parietal lobes. Of particular interest is the sensorimotor rhythm, SMR, an EEG pattern occurring in the 12 to 14 Hz range over this region. The SMR has a fascinating relationship with movement and muscle tone. When it's present, movement is inhibited, and muscle tone is reduced. During seizures, this delicate balance of brain activity becomes disrupted. The normal rhythmic patterns give way to chaotic electrical discharges that can spread across various brain regions. This disruption can originate from specific foci, particular points in the brain, or arise more generally, leading to different types of seizures with varying symptoms and severity. Evidence-based protocols and clinical efficacy. Two main neurofeedback approaches have emerged as primary interventions for epilepsy: sensorimotor rhythm, SMR, uptraining, and slow cortical potential, SCP, training. SMR-based and SCP-based neurofeedback have achieved an efficacious rating for seizure control, based on multiple controlled studies. For non-seizure manifestations of epilepsy, SMR-based protocols are rated as probably efficacious. Treatment typically involves 36 sessions following Sturman's protocol, where patients learn to increase SMR, 12 to 14 Hz, amplitude and duration while simultaneously suppressing theta, 4 to 7 Hz, beta, 20 plus Hz, and epileptiform spikes. The goal is to normalize both waking and sleep EEG patterns. Success rates are impressive. Studies show that approximately 82% of patients experience clinical improvement, with an average seizure reduction exceeding 50%. Perhaps most encouragingly, 5% of patients remain seizure-free for up to a year post-treatment. Part 4, Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, ADHD. Understanding ADHD's daily impact. Picture trying to focus on a crucial task while your mind constantly shifts between different thoughts, like a radio unable to stay tuned to one station. For individuals with ADHD, this isn't an occasional occurrence, it's their daily reality. ADHD manifests through three core symptom clusters: inattention, hyperactivity, and impulsivity, each presenting unique challenges in daily life. Inattention is characterized by persistent difficulty sustaining focus on tasks, frequent careless mistakes, and a tendency to misplace important items. Students might struggle to complete assignments, while adults might find themselves constantly missing deadlines or important details at work. The hyperactivity component manifests as excessive motor activity. Children are constantly in motion, while adults may experience intense restlessness or struggle to sit still during meetings. Impulsivity is characterized by a tendency to act without thinking, interrupting others, or making snap decisions without considering the consequences. Demographics and societal impact. The prevalence of ADHD presents a striking picture of its societal impact. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, approximately 11% of school-aged children receive an ADHD diagnosis, with the rate climbing to almost 20% among high school boys. Gender plays a significant role in diagnosis patterns. Boys receive ADHD diagnoses 4 to 5 times more frequently than girls, though this may reflect diagnostic bias rather than true prevalence differences. The impact on academic performance is substantial. Almost half of the children diagnosed with ADHD experience learning difficulties and challenges in communicating and interacting with peers. More concerning still, approximately 80% exhibit behavioral issues, often of a serious nature. Girls typically show more inattentive symptoms and are less likely to be diagnosed with comorbid conditions like learning disabilities or conduct disorders compared to their male counterparts. Neurobiology and pathomechanics. ADHD involves disruptions in multiple neural networks, particularly those governing attention, executive function, and impulse control. The condition is associated with differences in brain structure and function, including variations in the prefrontal cortex, basal ganglia, and cerebellum. These differences affect neurotransmitter systems, particularly dopamine and norepinephrine, which play crucial roles in attention and behavioral regulation. Evidence-based protocols and clinical efficacy. Neurofeedback for ADHD has achieved impressive clinical validation, earning a level 5 rating, efficacious and specific, based on 6 randomized controlled trials. The primary protocols include training to decrease the theta-beta ratio, increase sensorimotor rhythm, SMR, activity, and enhance slow cortical potential, SCP, activity. Treatment typically requires between 20 to 50 sessions to produce clinical improvement. Studies demonstrate that neurofeedback training results in significant gains in attention measures, impulse control, and response variability. The TOVA, Test of Variables of Attention, often shows marked improvement, along with enhanced scores on intelligence tests and academic achievement measures. Particularly encouraging is the evidence for long-term effectiveness. Unlike medication, which requires continuous use to maintain benefits, neurofeedback appears to produce lasting improvements. Studies show that gains in attention and behavior control often persist for months or even years after treatment completion. Part 5: Substance Use Disorders. Understanding addiction's grip. Imagine feeling compelled to seek something you know is harmful, unable to stop despite serious consequences to your health, relationships, and career. This is the reality for individuals struggling with substance use disorders, SUDs. As defined by leading researchers like Kube, addiction represents a chronically relapsing disorder characterized by 3 key elements: compulsive seeking and taking of the drug, loss of control over intake, and the emergence of negative emotional states when access is prevented, what experts call the dark side of addiction. Daily impact and manifestation. Substance use disorders manifest through a complex interplay of behavioral, emotional, and physiological symptoms. Individuals experience an overwhelming preoccupation with obtaining, using, and recovering from the substance. The condition erodes decision-making capacity, leading to continued use despite awareness of serious adverse consequences. Perhaps most insidiously, the disorder creates a new normal state where the brain functions suboptimally without the substance, driving continued use to avoid withdrawal symptoms. Demographics and prevalence. The scope of substance use disorders, particularly alcoholism, reveals their significant societal impact. The U.S. National Longitudinal Alcohol Epidemiologic Study estimates lifetime prevalence for adult alcoholism between 13.5 to 23.5%, with 7.5 to 9.5% of adults experiencing alcohol abuse and dependency within the past year. The impact on healthcare systems is substantial. 20% of hospitalized adults are alcoholics. More recent CDC data indicate that over 38 million adults engage in binge drinking 4 times a month, highlighting the widespread nature of problematic alcohol use. Neurobiology and pathomechanics. Researchers often observe distinct EEG patterns in individuals with substance use disorders, particularly in alcoholism. These patterns typically include deficient slow-wave activity in delta, theta, and alpha ranges, combined with excessive beta activity. Alcohol consumption tends to slow alpha frequency while increasing its amplitude, creating a characteristic EEG signature that helps inform treatment approaches. Evidence-based protocols and clinical efficacy. The neurofeedback approach to substance use disorders has earned a probably efficacious rating based on multiple randomized controlled trials, particularly using the Scott-Kaiser modification of the Penniston protocol. This protocol combines features of both ADHD and addiction treatment, demonstrating improved retention and abstinence rates in traditionally difficult-to-treat populations. Treatment typically begins with neurofeedback training targeting ADHD-like symptoms before progressing to the Penniston protocol components. The protocol includes several stages, temperature and EMG biofeedback to establish basic self-regulation skills, followed by alpha-theta neurofeedback training. During alpha-theta training, patients learn to increase both alpha and theta amplitudes while maintaining a conscious state, promoting deep relaxation while maintaining awareness. Success rates are encouraging. Studies show that 77% of patients who complete EEG biofeedback training maintain abstinence at 12 months, compared to 44% of controls. The protocol appears particularly effective when combined with residential or office-based rehabilitation programs and opioid replacement therapy for various substances, including alcohol, opioids, stimulants, and mixed substance use. Part 6. Tinnitus. Understanding the phantom sound. Imagine hearing a constant ringing, buzzing, or whistling sound that no one else can hear, a sound that persists even in complete silence. This is the daily reality for individuals with tinnitus. Unlike most medical conditions that can be observed or measured externally, tinnitus represents a deeply personal experience of sound without an external source. Most commonly associated with hearing loss, this condition can range from a mild annoyance to a debilitating condition that severely impacts quality of life. Symptoms and daily impact. Tinnitus primarily manifests as the perception of sound when no corresponding external sound is present. While often described as ringing in the ears, patients report a wide variety of phantom sounds, from high-pitched whistling to low rumbling, from intermittent buzzing to constant static. The condition becomes particularly challenging when it interferes with speech comprehension, making everyday conversations difficult and often leading to social isolation. The impact on daily life can be profound. Many individuals experience difficulty concentrating, as the phantom sound constantly competes for their attention. Sleep disturbances are common, as the absence of environmental sounds at night can make tinnitus seem louder and more intrusive. For some, this creates a vicious cycle where sleep deprivation exacerbates stress, which in turn appears to worsen the perception of tinnitus. Demographics and prevalence. Tinnitus affects an astounding number of Americans. Over 45 million individuals report experiencing this condition to some degree. The prevalence increases with age and is particularly common among veterans and individuals exposed to loud noise through their occupation or recreational activities. Despite its widespread occurrence, conventional medical treatments have shown limited success, often focusing on masking the sound rather than addressing its underlying mechanisms. Neurobiology and pathomechanics. While traditionally viewed as an ear condition, modern research reveals tinnitus as a complex neurological phenomenon involving both auditory and non-auditory brain networks. The condition often begins with damage to the auditory system, but it's the brain's response to this damage that creates the persistent phantom sound. This understanding has led to new treatment approaches focusing on neuroplasticity and cortical reorganization. Evidence-based protocols and clinical efficacy. Biofeedback and neurofeedback approaches to tinnitus have shown promising results, though with different levels of empirical support. Biofeedback for tinnitus has achieved a probably efficacious rating, while neurofeedback holds a possibly efficacious rating, reflecting the current state of research evidence. Biofeedback protocols typically combine surface EMG and finger temperature feedback, focusing on reducing overall physiological arousal, which often exacerbates tinnitus symptoms. The approach helps patients develop greater awareness of and control over their stress response, which frequently correlates with tinnitus severity. Neurofeedback protocols have evolved to include sophisticated approaches such as training to modify power in specific EEG frequency bands, delta and tau, and down-regulating activity in cortical auditory processing regions through real-time functional MRI, RTFMRI. These interventions aim to directly influence the neural networks involved in tinnitus perception. Treatment outcomes show particular promise in cases where tinnitus causes significant distress. While these approaches may not eliminate the phantom sound entirely, they often help patients develop better coping mechanisms and reduce the impact of tinnitus on their daily lives. Success is typically measured not just in terms of perceived sound intensity, but also in improvements in sleep quality, concentration, and overall quality of life. The research limitations in this area primarily stem from the reliance on single-group pre-test-post-test designs, which makes drawing causal conclusions challenging. However, the promising results from existing studies have spurred increased interest in more rigorous research designs, suggesting that our understanding of effective treatments will continue to evolve. Conclusion: the future of brain-body intervention. The journey through these various disorders and their treatment protocols reveals several compelling patterns in the field of biofeedback and neurofeedback. First and foremost, we see a clear progression from treating symptoms to addressing underlying neurophysiological mechanisms. Whether working with anxiety's autonomic imbalance, depression's frontal asymmetry, or epilepsy's dysregulated brain rhythms, these approaches offer ways to directly influence previously inaccessible biological processes. The evidence bases for these interventions continue to grow stronger, with several conditions now achieving the highest efficacy ratings. Anxiety disorders, depression, and ADHD in particular have shown robust responses to these treatments, with effect sizes comparable to or exceeding traditional interventions. Perhaps most importantly, these improvements often persist long after treatment concludes, suggesting that patients learn lasting self-regulation skills rather than developing dependence on ongoing intervention. Common threads and therapeutic principles. Across all conditions, several key principles emerge. The importance of individualized treatment protocols is evident, whether adjusting neurofeedback parameters for optimal learning or tailoring biofeedback approaches to specific physiological patterns, success often depends on careful customization. Additionally, the integration of multiple modalities frequently produces superior results, as seen in the Peniston Protocol for Substance Use Disorders or the combination of HRV biofeedback with neurofeedback for anxiety. Clinical implications and future directions. Looking forward, several exciting developments promise to further advance the field. The emergence of real-time fMRI neurofeedback offers unprecedented precision in targeting specific brain regions, while advances in quantitative EEG analysis provide increasingly sophisticated ways to understand and normalize brain function. The growing integration of artificial intelligence and machine learning suggests potential for even more refined and effective treatment protocols. However, challenges remain. The need for standardization in protocols, more large-scale randomized controlled trials, and better understanding of individual response factors all present opportunities for future research. The field must also grapple with questions of accessibility, as these treatments often require significant time commitments and specialized equipment. The promise of personalized medicine. Perhaps most exciting is the way these approaches align with the broader movement toward personalized medicine. By providing real-time information about physiological and neurological processes, biofeedback and neurofeedback allow for truly individualized treatment approaches. As our understanding of brain-body connections continues to deepen, these interventions are likely to play an increasingly central role in mental health treatment. The future of biofeedback and neurofeedback appears bright, with continuing technological advances and growing evidence bases supporting their efficacy. As we move forward, these approaches offer hope not just for symptom management, but for genuine healing and lasting change in the lives of those affected by these challenging conditions.